Show Me the Way podcast, episode 33, The Green, Green Pastures of Ron Keith. Ladies and gentlemen, very excited about this episode. I am going to introduce you to Professor Lorax, who speaks to the trees for all of us. But you know what it is? What I really think is amazing about this guy and what he's going to bring to the table? He's going to talk about integration, the culture that you need to look at in order to bring on the right business. How difficult is it? I've seen this so many times with the integration of a business into an existing business. Ron is going to lay that out for you, what he does, and give you the answers necessary to have the kind of success that you want in growing your business. Stay tuned. You're going to really enjoy this. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLC, about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I am your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is Ron Keith, CEO of ArborMasters, whose company is all about trees, as is Ron, and the success he and his company have had in growing the business via acquisitions. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Dave. I feel honored to be on your show. And, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet thing for me. This topic kind of would relate to I'm getting old now that I've got a little wisdom. So,
No. You're experienced.
Yeah.
That's all it is. You're experienced. People say you get old. Nah, I got a lot of experience. That's all that it is. So I want people to be able to identify. You have known Ron for a while. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where were you born?
Well, Dave, believe it or not, I've been born right here in Kansas City. I haven't ever left. I probably haven't been more about 10 miles from my home. My home from where my office is to where my home was, where I grew up is, you know, I'm in Shawnee. And so I'm still in Shawnee, Kansas. So, you know, I've never moved out of Shawnee, Kansas. So I've been here all my life. And I got to tell you that, you know, we all travel and I've traveled a lot of places, but I still absolutely love Kansas City.
Absolutely. You know, they use the old adage, great place to raise a family, but it is truly correct. And what's more exciting now with our brand new airport, our excellent football team, mm-hmm. but really the development of downtown Kansas City and the continuing evolution of this area, it's really a secret. I don't know that we want to share it with the rest of the world. We're all about you, but I kind of like it the way it is.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah, Kansas City has evolved. You know, stop and think about it. We've got all the professional teams here.
There you go.
And we still have a country feel to our city. But we have some of the finest food restaurants and dining and shopping. And you know, a lot of that stuff is all new because it's grown so much in Kansas City. So we, in my lifetime here, I've got to really, you know, kind of experience a lot of new buildings, new restaurants and things like that that come into Kansas City since it's developed so much. And, you know, we've got our tram now in Kansas City that goes up and down the tracks. And that's pretty cool. You know, that was a big deal years ago and they're finally getting that done. So they've got all kinds of activities down. I go down there. I can't even believe it a lot of times. You know, you live here so long, you don't go down there much, but when you do, it's pretty awesome.
It is a great downtown. There's no question about it. It's only getting better. So where did you go to school? Did you go to Shawnee Mission North? Or?
Well, it's a good guess, but they were terrible. We went to Northwest. So I'm a Northwest grad.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, okay, good.
So it was fairly new when I was going there. And, you know, school is definitely not what I would call my wheelhouse. So
school it wasn't for Elon Musk either. Yeah, so that's no crime.
Yeah, it just kind of, what I always said, it robbed me of my personal time. But I never wasn't a great student in school. I tell you what I did, though. I had some great relationships with my teachers. And I learned, I thought about this the other day after you had called me and thinking about my career. Because, you know, you don't think about your career a whole lot. You just go. And I haven't been on a podcast really to talk about my business like this before. So I kind of been thinking a lot about it. And I'm thinking, you know what? I learned mentorship and relationships in school. And I didn't even know it. But I built relationship with some of my teachers that I still have to this day.
Okay, let's go into this. Because you're the first guy I've had on here that really has said that to me. Most people say, you know, mentorship and business. Please go a little deeper. Share with us.
Well, you know, it was just something that I think I had as a young man, and my dad was good at it. I didn't identify it at that time. We really didn't identify things like we do today. We just, we called it, you know, just talking.
Right.
But, you know, it was really weird. I just had a passion to meet people at a young age. I wasn't an introvert, but I wasn't outgoing either. But when I got familiar and comfortable with somebody, I really enjoyed that. I took time to learn about them and get to know them. And I did that with my teachers and at a young age. And next thing I know, I became the teacher's favorite. And so I got a lot of one-on-one training because learning was difficult for me. And, you know, math was difficult to me. Unbelievable to say that running a business, but you know, a lot of the things that going through school was very difficult. And so I needed a lot of one-on-one training. And I got that, but I got it because we had relationships with them. And they even got to know my parents. They would come over for dinner and just enjoy them. And what's amazing is I'm still friends with them today. It's just phenomenal to go back that many years and still have that relationship with the teachers that I had that I respect so much.
I'll be honest with you, everybody I've interviewed, you're the first one that can say that. In fact, I think you're the first one that I know that has a relationship with their teachers going back. I don't. We moved a fair amount, so that made it somewhat difficult. That's impressive that you can maintain those kind of relationships and that mentorship for that long period of time.
Well, they invested in me. You know, they invested in me at a young age, which was phenomenal. And then, of course, now I've got three daughters and two of my girls are teachers too. So, you know, teachers they're so grossly underpaid and they go through a lot, and I respect them to the ultimate most to do what they do. And my teachers, I can tell you right now, Dave, I wouldn't be where I'm at if it wasn't for the investment in teachers that I had through my high school.
So why would I think that somehow you've given back knowing that because you're so resilient or so ebullient on the fact that they've given you so much? Somehow, something tells me that you give back at a very, very high level.
Well, you know, I guess that's based on each person. You know, I will tell you that my business has been what it is, and I know we're going to get into it some more, but at the end of the day, you know, I've always enjoyed people, and I've always grown up in the tree business because I'm third generation. So I got to identify with the people in tree care, and, you know, and they've changed over the years. Trust me. I mean, back then it was a pretty rough group of people, and, you know, trees being a tree trimmer in the tree business, you know, in the 60s and 70s is nothing like it is today. It was a pretty rough crowd, and we didn't have a lot of technology, and so it was a lot of hard work, and we didn't have a lot of machinery to do it either like we do today. And so, but those people were kind to me and they were good to me at a young age, and I worked with them. And believe it or not, some of them are my babysitters. And so, you know, okay. my dad treated them well, and we had relationships with them. And it's just, you know, going back that far, it's just, I can just say how much I appreciate the industry. I didn't know it at the time, but how much it's changed, but to be able to pass that on, you know, year after year after year, and grow with the type of people that we have today and the skill sets it takes to do this work and the amount of energy and the amount of passion that the people have that work in this company is so much appreciated. And I just, you know, I grew up there. So I feel very comfortable sitting and talking with them and interacting with them. And, you know, I'm a hands-on guy. And so I get to, you know, I get to interact with them a lot during the day and things like that. So it's just been fun for me. This hasn't been a job. You know, I worked with my dad. My dad was my best friend, and I couldn't wait to get out of school. Wow. So I could get with good my dad. I'd get out of school, and then we would eat dinner, and we'd go out and bid jobs, you know, in the evening. And my dad would sit and talk to a customer for 45 minutes, you know, or an hour, trying, you know, just getting to know them and sell them tree work and become their tree person. You know, at that time, there wasn't arborists like there is today, but we were their tree guy, you know. But that's what I've done. That's, you know, that my whole career has been built, you know, watching my dad build relationships. And then, you know, it just kind of was passed on to me automatically, you know, as an example. I loved it. It was natural.
So you got out of school and jumped into business with your dad. He had already set up a business, already set up the tree business, or did you start it together?
No. My grandfather started the business in New Orleans, Louisiana. My dad worked in the railroad here in Kansas City.
Oh, wow.
And he had a really good job on the railroad. Back then, you know, the railroad job, that was hard to get on, Santa Fe. And my dad got on there and could have had a really good career there in retirement. But his dad said, look, you need to get in the tree business, help me out. And so he did. He started the tree business in Kansas City. So we had one in New Orleans and one here in Kansas City. And so then So that's how it got started. And they ran it together for many years. And early on in my dad's career, we didn't have winter work. And so in New Orleans, you know, it was warmer down there. So we would actually go to New Orleans in the winter for several months and take our crews and go down there and work. So I actually went to grade school in Louisiana, New Orleans.
No idea. So
when I got out of school, then, yeah, we came back here during the summers. And that's how we had to do it. And then eventually my dad got enough business going and got stable enough where we didn't have to do that anymore. And that's how it went early on. And, you know, that's where I started. And we worked together. And as I got older and he taught me how to, you know, there's not anything in my company that I haven't done. From climbing trees to pruning to, you know, running all the machinery we have and just everything he taught me, everything I could, you know, need to know. And here's something that's pretty interesting. So as I got older, you know, naturally I got more confident. I said, look, you need to get out of my way. I need to grow. You know, I want to grow this thing into a multi-million dollar business. You know, we had one little location at that point. Later on, when I, in 85, my grandfather had sold his business in New Orleans and retired and my dad didn't want anything to do with it. And I was too young to know anything about it. And so anyway, as you can see, I'm real passionate about it here.
You are.
But anyway, so I didn't get that branch, but I just wanted to grow. And my dad, one thing about my dad that was so awesome, and I know looking back now that I'm older, how he was willing to give that up to me at a younger age. My dad wasn't ready necessarily to retire, but he also knew that if he didn't get out of the way, he was going to cause me not to be able to reach my dreams as well.
Okay, that's incredible because I can't tell you the number of families like this, father and son, where it's hard for the father to get out of the way. Sometimes they don't.
Absolutely. Yes.
So you must, that is, I guess, high praise on the relationship with your father that maybe there ought to be a case study done on if you were able to make that happen. You obviously were. I mean, that's tough duty, Ron, really, because you got to live with that 24/7.
It is. And it was difficult for my dad. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we didn't argue about it and everything went smooth. It didn't. I mean, it basically came down to said, I said, Dad, I want to grow. You're not doing things like I want to do them and the way I see it. I'm just going to go start my own. You know, if you don't want me to take this one, I'm going to, you know, it was kind of that bad, you know? And of course my dad didn't want to do that. And he did, and he gave it up, and I went to town, and I took it over in 87, and we had four employees or five, and I started to go to town, and next thing I know, you know, here we are, many, many years later, 200 plus employees, we got 9 locations.
There you go.
And we're growing every day. We've created just an absolute great company with great people. I've enjoyed it. You know, it's been very rough and it's been very difficult at times, like every business, but I've got to be outside most of my career and meet tons and tons of great people in the Kansas City area. And now I'm able to meet people all over because we have companies in Iowa all the way down to Texas. So we cover, you know, our footprint is going to be the Midwest and we're going to continue to grow. We have our vision, our company is to have 20 branches by 2030. And so we're well on our way to do that. So, you know, this year and every year we try to grow by that number to hit that goal. And that's our objective. So I've got a great team in place. I've got lots of runway with these young people that I've had come into the company and they're smart, talented people. And I know there's a lot of things out there saying how the young don't want to work and things like that. And that's probably true. But I'll tell you, Dave, what's amazing is that during this time, my company, Arbor Masters, has been at full capacity. And I know people are starving for help. And I can't understand that. But, you know, we've created something that the words got out and we've continued to have a pretty good list of people that want to come here.
Wow.
And they're moving in. We've got a guy that's going to start in next month, and he's coming from California. And so wow. we have people that are moving, relocating to come into the Arbor Masters, you know, company and be a part of it. So, you know, as an owner, you know, I sit back and I go, wow, that's pretty overwhelming for a guy like me. I mean, to know that people are willing to pick their family up and move to a location and come work at our company. I mean, I don't take that lightly. That's just, to me, is a pretty cool deal.
So you come in, you take over your dad's business, or your dad moves on in a business you both had, but then you're able to exponentially grow that. What process did you go through? What did you have to learn? How did you evolve in order to make that happen? Because candidly, Ron, a lot of people don't evolve. It doesn't make them wrong, but not everybody can do this.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that question, Dave, naturally, but I'm a risk taker. I've always been a risk taker. And yep. the other thing is, I got to tell you, I am not scared to fail. And I have failed at a lot of things. And I've made some really bad decisions. But, you know, I've always been a guy that says, I think that'll work, let's go give it a try. And I'm always like pushing the envelope or getting outside the box and seeing the results. And I've never been scared of that. I've never been scared necessarily of risking. You know, I'm not talking about taking big loans at the bank, financial risks, mm-hmm. but I am talking right. about taking a service of your business and say, let's invest in it and see what happens and that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's what I think happened. I just was a risk taker and I got good people. And these people would say, like our first branch was Wichita, Kansas. And I had a guy come and he says, you know what? I really want to raise my family in Wichita. Would you be willing to do that? So it wasn't even my idea.
oh, wow. Yeah, but you listened.
Yeah, I listened because I didn't want to lose him. I mean, he was awesome. Yeah. And he's still here today, by the way. He's getting ready to retire, but he's still with me. But anyway, I said, absolutely, let's give it a try. And that was branch one and then branch two. And so some of those were organics. And then the last couple we've done now, we've done, I think, four now that have been companies. But, you know, it's been just one of those things that just kind of happened. And you know, with not a lot of plans. Now, today, it's a different story. I do have a very strategic plan. And I do have, you know, we do OKRs and we have an executive team and we have goals and we have financial goals and we have budgets and we've got scorecards for all of our branch managers. And I mean, we're very, very numbers driven company today. And one thing that I had to do when I bought the company from my mom and dad, my dad said, look, you've got the outside of it done. You know how to bid the work. You know how to do the work. You know how to run the machine. But the person that really runs your company is your mother sitting in there running the books. And he says, what I need you to do is I want you to do her job for 1 year. And you do that job for 1 year, you'll be ready for this company. And so I said, that's good with me. For 1 year, I answered the phones, payroll. I did all the payroll, payables, receivables, all the bank books, the reconciling. I did it all for 1 year in that company. It was the greatest lesson I ever learned because my mom did run our company.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And we did all the work, but my mom ran the company. And man, you talk about learning something. Now, that's when I really felt good about when I learned how to run it financially with the numbers and what made money and what didn't make money and all that. You know, golly, it was. I wouldn't have been where I'm at today if I didn't do that.
What's interesting is you're really the hands-on entrepreneur. I mean, literally, at every level. And after all this time in the business, still great energy. I mean, a lot of people that I see that have gone through your life experiences to get to this point are worn down and worn out. How do you maintain the level of energy and how do we package that and sell it internationally?
Well, like I said, Dave, you know, this is not a job to me, you know?
Right. Right.
This is fun. And you know, this has just been a lot of fun and I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet by no means. And I think I was looking at your book, one of your books, and it said, what was it? You might remember a quote that they don't die because they quit business. They you know, you lose interest and you get old, right? It's about getting old.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the quote. I wanted to stay it for you. But because it's a great quote in your book, and it's about, you know, we've got to stay in the game. And I've had tons of opportunity to get out of the game. I mean, our business right now, the green industry is just hot for mergers and acquisitions. I mean, it is, I can't tell you how many emails I get a week with, you know, private equity trying to, you know, get an interview or get me to call them and talk to them for 15, 20 minutes. And there's a lot of movement in our industry right now, which, you know, it's good and bad, naturally. You know, I feel burdened by it because we got a family business going here and I don't want to disrupt that. And but they do bring a lot of opportunity to your company. And I know people, there's lots of people having big decisions to make right now because they're getting phone calls and emails they've never seen before. And it's pretty awesome when you work in a tree business you thought was really not valuable, and then people automatically think it's real valuable, you know? And so there is a lot going on.
Let's talk about, I want to get back to it, but let's talk about today in the 21st century. What is an arborist? I mean, do people really appreciate what you do? Because I think they just think it's tree trimming. It's like, dude, it transcends that. It's much more involved. Give us a flavor of what it looks like today versus when you started, took it over in 85, 87.
Exactly. I'm glad you asked that because I tell you, tree care is like any other industry. It has advanced at a rapid pace. And here's why. We've got research and we've got data today. We didn't have that back then.
Yep.
We have tons of people that have spent years looking at trees, diagnosing trees, giving all kinds of data and writing books. And now today we have so much good information on trees that we operate on a scientific approach. We're not just going to go out there and go, oh, you know, we need to, you know, there's a lot of the tree companies back in the day, it was raise, thin, top, you know, remove, you know, those are all the words, you know, that you use in tree work. And that's not the verbiage and the narrative that we use in the tree industry today, you know, because they don't mean anything. We have specs. When you get a proposal from Arbor Masters, you have a spec and it tells you that we're going to be removing deadwood at a certain diameter, you know, and a certain size and exactly what you're going to be doing and treating with your tree. It's the same way with our plant care division. We have a huge plant care division, which is, you know, people ask, well, what do you do? I say, I'm in tree care. And my objective is we remove trees because you have to. We have trees that are dying due to diseases and viruses and insects that we have to remove. But at the end of the day, what the narrative needs to be is we have technology today that can fend off viruses, diseases, and insects better than ever before. We have the ability to save trees better than ever before. And that's what people need to understand is because they see the trees looking bad, looking pale, and then a tree guy will come by and go, well, it's probably not going to make it. We need to cut it out. And that is not true today. We need to be saving every tree we have in the Midwest. I work in the Midwest. That's where our business is. And we are shortage of trees. We're losing trees faster than we're replacing them.
I did not know that.
We are. We're losing trees faster than replacing them in the Midwest. We've had a terrible disease come through here, the emerald ash borer, and it has totally, it kills every ash trees in your city. It will wipe them out. And we have an injection that will save them. If we can get in the front end of that, we can inject that tree and we can protect it. And it will make it and it'll look beautiful in the process. And so, you know,
no idea.
That's what's going on in the tree care industry. We have all, and the other thing is you look at chemical, everybody, you know, back in the day, we used to spray every tree and it would drift, you know. You couldn't, you know, in Kansas say, oh, you can't do it on a windy day. Well, pick one. There isn't any, you know. And so, you know, and so now we can inject those trees, right? We can use a third of the chemical and it goes in the tree instead of out in the air. And the way that tree care is done today is the safest, most effective way to do tree care I've ever seen. That's why I'm engaged in the business, is because the technology in this business is going so great and going so fast, and it's improving and we never used to be able to save trees, Dave. We really didn't have the technology and the chemical to do it. And now, to save a tree that would normally have died is phenomenal. And we're doing it every day. And it's motivating. When you go into a city and you look down that city street, and on one side of it, we injected the ash trees and every one of them are alive. And on the other side, we didn't do anything and they're all dying. And so we have so much proof that this is working and it's working well. We just need to continue to educate our clients to invest in that and invest in their trees. And that's a big turning point. People have become very attached to their trees. They become very attached to their trees. You know, trees are very important to people today. And it's awesome.
I love trees. I go crazy. I got old Bob here is what I call the tree in the backyard. He's about 100 years old. Yeah, I think we're going to call this section, you're the Elon Musk of trees, or you are the Kansas Lorax. I don't know which one, but I got to tell you, this enthusiasm is infectious. I'm deadly serious because you've been doing this a while, and there's nothing better than having an entrepreneur like you on the show. Great energy, great enthusiasm. God love you. I mean, this is fantastic. People got to listen to it just to get the energy out of it and apply it to their business. But you can see the passion. So does the passion come because you found your unique ability, what you do best, or what you do best come because of your passion? Or is that a fair question to ask? Which comes first, the chicken or the eggs?
Exactly. I think that it's the passion that has to come first. And if you're passionate about it, you'll be good at it, right? I mean, you look at any famous athlete, one reason they're good at what they do, because they're passionate about it as a young person. And they practiced and they indulged in it and they couldn't do anything. That's all they thought about, you know? So then they become a great athlete. And like I said, I've never had a job. I tell people all the time, Dave, I don't know what it's like to have a job. I've never had a real job. I've had this job. And it's been a lot of challenges and a lot of fun. And the greatest thing is this, the growth of the amount of knowledge that we have in trees today. I mean, a lot of people don't realize there's a time to prune a tree. You don't prune every tree during the summer. In the years that I've done this, I mean, we did all of our work in the summer. People go, oh, it's summer, the leaves are out. I want to do work on my tree because it's hanging too low, or, you know, these limbs, I can, you know, it's warm. I can be outside and I can enjoy and look at them. Now I want to prune them, or I want to, you know, do work with them. And there's a lot of trees like oaks that should not be pruned necessarily in the summer much. You can do it, but it's not op time for them. There's a specific time in the winter is the best time for a certain amount of oaks. No one would know that, but you know, most people don't understand that, and we can do better for the trees now because we've done a scientific approach to it. We've done research. We have empirical data that proves that this type of tree will heal better and do better with less risk of injury and insects due to pruning if we do it now versus summertime.
I think I'm getting like a certificate here, and I ought to be writing you a check. I mean, I'm serious. I'm learning stuff about trees that, you know, I don't know. And I love trees. I, you know, growing up in Minnesota and then Colorado, if you ain't in love with trees, then I don't know what, you know, I don't know what you're doing there. I guess the only people who don't like trees are people involved in concrete. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah, probably so. Well, here's a good one for you, Dave, to take with you. Good one is that what we have found and how Arbor Masters is moving into the future and where Arbor Masters really fits in the Midwest is that we know we have bad soil. The root system of the tree tells you everything. We have tools today that can excavate all that dirt around that root system without harming the root system in any way through root excavation that we do now. And we can put all new soil around that is organic, and makes just a world of difference to the health and the vibrant of the root system. Which, what does that do? Well, it makes your tree greener in the summer. It makes the fall color prettier in the fall. It gives the tree all types of air and what it needs to continue to grow and be healthy. Because if you have an unhealthy root system, you're going to have an unhealthy tree. And so today we do more work on root systems than we do in the canopy. And that's where the real big return is at. What we're finding out is all these trees that have been planted, Dave, for many years, they left the burlap on them. They left the string and all the, you know, on them. And they can't get out past that ball very well. And they start to turn and it's called girdling root system. And basically what it does, it circles around that ball until it chokes the tree out. And we literally excavate the root system. We'll go in there and cut that root out of the way. And it's like the tree takes a deep breath for the first time in like 10 years or 5 years, you know, whatever. And so that's what I'm saying. We are saving trees, man. That's why I'm excited. We need to save every tree we can in the Midwest.
I get it. No, I'm a passionate follower now. Let's talk about you expanded your business, but now you've gone out and acquired some business, done some acquisitions. Tell me why you made that jump.
Well, it was a growth strategy that we made. And, you know, in my executive team, we sat down every year we meet every quarter. And of course, you know, at the end of the year is our big meeting and we do our OKRs and we do our strategic moves, how we want to move forward. And acquisition is a way that we could grow fast enough to get to where we want to be. And if we find the right companies, now that we've identified our culture, we have core values, we have our culture built, we have our career progression built in our company, we have lots of opportunities now. So when we go into another tree care company and we can show them what we have to offer that can get them further down the road as well, then because, you know, tree companies are made up of, you know, owner operators.
Right.
And a lot of families, like you said, a lot of families have grown up in this tree business, but they've had, they're kind of the same size, you know, and they've just worked it and worked it and worked it. And here they are many years later and they don't know what to do. And there's a lot of that going on in our industry. And that's why it's such a very hot industry in the M&A sector, is because it's a fragmented business. And so there's opportunity there. So I want that opportunity as well. So I'm looking at that, but these companies got to fit. You know, we're not after the growth just for growth's sake. They have to fit our culture. So when they see our culture and they can identify with it, and we've met with them enough and we think they're a fit, then we engage and we start to go down that road. And what we like to do, some projects together. So what we may do is we do a lot of city work. Right. So we'll end up getting a city contract on some printer or something. And we'll say, okay, we'd like you to work this contract and we'll help you, but we'll watch you work and we'll work together on it and see how we do. And man, do they, you know, that's why we're not pressuring them, but we want to fit. It only works if it fits. And so that's what we've done. So just about every acquisition we've done, we've worked together on projects prior to the acquisition taking place.
So you're the Lorax integrator. That's what I'm going to call you, because you've figured out the magic, which is anybody can go out and buy any company. But in order to make it work, you know, you want to make sure you're approaching these projects the same way. That is outstanding. So you're working together. How long do you work together before you make the final close? And maybe there's no specific rule. It just depends on how you feel about it.
It does. That's true. It's usually by how big the company is, the size of them, and how quick it can get through. The last one we did was when Davenport, we bought Advantage Tree in Davenport. They basically own 40% of the market in Davenport. They're a great company. We worked with them on contract work for 2 years. And in 2 years, we just lined up. And when I went to the owner and said, hey, would you consider just joining forces? He'd go, absolutely. I would love to come work in your company. And that's how we did it. You know, he worked about 2 years. And the others, we do maybe one or two projects together. And, you know, we know pretty quick if they're a fit, you know. And so we've never had any problems, you know, at this point. But it does take some time to really make it work. And I know most M&As, they just want to buy them to buy, you know, for the numbers sake. And so we're taking a little bit different approach that way.
Smart approach, man. You're doing the right thing. What would be the maybe three top pieces of advice you'd give to somebody who's going through or looking at wanting to do an acquisition?
Well, that's a good question as well. Number one would be is that do not sell your business if you've had a bad day or a bad week or a bad month.
You're a smart man. There's a time and a place. And
yeah, there's a lot of times, Dave, you could have bought my business really cheap. Just so you know that. You know, it's like my dad always told me, he goes, don't go trade your car in when it's all dirty and filthy. He said, go detail it really good. Then go try to get, you know, top money for it. Right. And so anyway, so smart. You need to just make sure that it's not an emotional decision. Right. And that you've thought about it. And then that'd be priority number one, is make sure it's not an emotional. And then again, the second thing is, as a family, and most of these companies we're looking at are owner-operator, family-owned, per se, businesses. Make sure that you've had the family meeting and you both have agreed, or whoever's involved in that meeting, that you want to pursue it and go through it, because it is it's all fun on the front end, but when it comes time to really go through it and sign the dotted line, it's a big step, because you've put everything into your business. And so we are very careful about that, and we give them lots of opportunity and time to think it over. But man, our objective is that we look them right in the eye and say, we want this to be the greatest decision that you made, and that you walk away for a year from now and go, this was great for me. And we work hard at trying to do that. And so it has to fit culturally, and you have to decide, do you think you can work for that company, or do you want to move on, right? That's a big decision as well. And a lot of them are, you know, they want to, and then they come and, you know, it doesn't work out. They don't get to make the decision anymore. And that's a big step when they can't make the decision anymore. And they got to be prepared for that, you know?
Excellent. So if I was going to, after listening to you, I would say you're not leaving business anytime soon, because it's not a business. It's not a job. It's your passion. Do you see this doing for another 20 years? I mean, I just don't see you getting out, and nothing wrong with that. You know, I
well, mean, here, yeah, that's cool. You know, the saying is, if you're going to lead leadership, if you're going to lead, you got to lead yourself first, right?
Yes.
That's the first person you got to make sure you're leading properly with your life and your life balance and your family life, your personal financials and stuff like that. You've got to have all that in place. That's a very key factor in, I believe, my success. I've always made sure that my life was in order and in shape and before I could go run a business that way. And that can be difficult too. And so, you know, look, I'm in great shape. I work out, I eat really healthy as I can and it's always in the front for my life and what I do. I want to stay physically motivated, and I love it. I mean, it's just as good now as it's ever been. And here's the thing, I just keep getting good people. And when you get good people, Dave, you know that, it just motivates you to keep going.
Yes, I get that. Yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, and so that's the biggest thing is I bring in, and like acquiring that company, Jeremy's his name, up in Davenport, Iowa. I mean, Advantage Tree, when we acquired him, that guy is awesome. He come into our company, he's on our executive team now, he's a decision maker. You know, we made him vice president just recently because he's doing so well. And it just, I just love sitting around the table, you know, and meeting these people. They're full of energy and they got great ideas. And we're going places, you know?
So what do you read for business growth? I'm sure the audience wants to know, what do you typically look at that helps get you these ideas that allow you to continue to evolve really as a person and then as an owner of a business?
Right. Well, now, today we have a world of, we've got, you know, millions and millions of, you know, things that we can look at. And in some ways it's too much, right? I mean,
yes.
you can listen to podcasts and read books and, you know, go to all kinds of meetings, and these people are reaching out to you to go to more meetings and learn about business and teach you about business, and consultants are everywhere, you know, you know, so there's all types of opportunity. What I recommend is, you just got to, it's like anything else, pick one or two or three. So what I've done is I'll pick one and I'll study that person and their technique, and I'll try to, and I'll read through it and see if it's something I can implement. If I can implement it, then I'm going to stay with them for like maybe a year and until I play it out, right? And then once I've taken the good out of that, I'll move on to the next one and get the next good. But, you know, at the end of the day, Dave, I've got one book that I never, you know, never get far from, and that's the Bible. You know, I'm very much in tune to what I believe Scripture tells us how to run our businesses, how to run our lives. And that's really my solid book. If you want to know the go-to book I have from the time of morning till the time, you know, that's my go-to book. But there's lots. You know, I listen to Craig Rochelle. He's with Life Church. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal leader. You know, there's several of those I really like and listen to. Andy Stanley's another good one of mine that I follow pretty closely, you know, as far as leadership and things like that. But, you know, I love podcasts. I listen to, I learn I love to learn, you know, I do. I really do love to learn. Like I said, I wasn't good in school. And so maybe that's why I have this passion to learn. And I'm a visual learner. And now we have all the audio that, you know, put your pods in and drive for a little bit or hang, you know, it's just so much to, you know, they make it easy to learn today. And I learn from other people, you know, that's how I've always learned is from other people. So that's what I do.
Well, here's the good news. Apparently, Elon Musk wasn't very good in school. And I think what it means when someone says they didn't do well in school, they were bored out of their mind. They knew there was something else in life. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what I've learned today from Ron, that he saw something bigger and better. He's out there doing it in such a way that he's impacting not only the customers, but people in his business and the lives of others. Thank you, Ron Keith, for being involved. Very inspirational. I think we'll call you, if I may, Professor Lorax. I think you know, you bring that wisdom and the love and the belief in what is important in this world, which is trees, and I agree with you 100%. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're in search of assistance, please go to davidsider.com or spencerfain.com. and schedule a consultation. Also, make sure to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Ron, how do people reach you? Can you give us your contact information?
Well, absolutely. The best way to reach me is Arbor Masters, right, at 913-441-8888. We'd be happy to reach me there. Also, you can contact me via email at rkeith@arbormasters.com. And that's a great way to communicate as well. I'm always on my email. I'll get it right away. I would love to interact with anybody that needs to, would like to hear more. I'm not done. I can't believe it's already been 45 minutes.
I got a feeling we're coming back in 24. I'm going to tell you that right now. I can see this coming down.
Yeah, we'll have a lot more things to talk about for sure.
We absolutely will. Thanks again to Ron. Ladies and gentlemen, until we see you next time, be safe.
And I want you to know that this podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice, and it is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in the podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.